Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
You know you want to do it. Just do it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of...
There he goes.
The Flats and Shanks Six Nations pod. We'll just call it the Guinness Six Nations pod. Sorry, Sam Scott, Verv. This is it. This is the unofficial pod because no one wants to pay us. Got no friends.
We haven't asked anyone to pay us, I don't think.
Got no grand. Those orcs are doing well.
We should do... We should try and like do a pod, do our pod properly sometime.
Yeah,
like
this is it.
We've talked about it a few times, but we just don't do it, and that's right. Fine, because we like as it is.
Hold that thought. Ready? Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Guinness Six Nations podcast with myself, Tom Shanklin, and my partner in crime, Monsieur David Flatman. Now, what a weekend of sport we have had. Three epic games. It started off on Friday night with France versus Ireland, then carried on the Saturday with Italy versus England, finished with one of the best comebacks nearly we've ever seen since Rocky IV. Now, to dissect all of this rugby action, this analysis. Welcome, David Flatman.
You've done well there, considering it. It's not. Are we going to get sued by Guinness?
No, we're calling it the Guinness Six Nations. That's what it is.
Oh, right, yeah. We're not pretending we've partnered up.
No.
We should partner up, really, because...
Bloody right, the amount I drink.
I know, and it's like, do you know, like... We've all done it where you partner up with a brand and you're like, do I like the brand? That's fine, but actually they're sort of paying my mortgage at this stage partly, so I'll say I like it. Everyone does that a bit, and the older you get, I think the less inclined you are to do that actually. But Guinness is one of those ones where it's like, I look at the people they're using and think they're great, and I see why they've chosen them, and I do wonder to myself, are they drinking Guinness at home, these people? Maybe, maybe not. And for me, it's like I actually also this is going to sound, I drink it at home, but also when I go to the pub, that is what I drink. But I also keep it some Guinness in my car, which doesn't sound appropriate. But my mate, you know, have you met Weird Ollie yet? No, Weird Ollie, basic bloke, but nice enough. He, if ever I need driving around anywhere, he drives me around in my car. Right, so it sorts him out. You met Ollie, funny looking bloke. He looks like he's been on steroids for years because he's got a really square jaw.
Yeah, and he wants to drive in budgie smugglers. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I drove. I was in town for a drink with him, but Christmas drink with him before Christmas. And Danny Grucott was in town with his kids, and he joined us for a drink. And the next day, he was like, "Yeah, your mate Ollie, is he on the gear? He's got a very square jaw, as in the steroids." I said, "No, he's always had that since he was a kid." Anyway. Because my Land Rover, it's got a fridge in the center compartment. You remember those? It's got a fridge in there. So Ollie will generally keep my fridge stocked up with a couple of Guinnesses. So when he picks me up from somewhere at night, I can have a Guinness on the motorway on the way home from a can. That is luxury, being driven in your own car, having a can of Guinness.
Mm.
But my point is, they don't sponsor us, but they probably should. Like, that's what I think, really.
All I can think of there is a couple of cans of Guinness. I'm just thinking, you'll have to have a pit stop, need a wee. That'd annoy me. I'd rather get back.
If I recline my seat too much and my body feels like it's kind of stretched out a bit, then I need a wee. If I cramp myself up, I can basically compress my bladder and not wee for like six, I'm like 8 hours at a time. I'm like a dog, mate. I can just go 8 hours.
Like a camel. Isn't it weird that...
Yeah.
Weird is the appropriate word as well. Like, everyone's got a mate and they call it, like, you've got one called Weird Ollie. I got one called Weird Andrew. They're just...
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah. Just everyone's got a little one, a mate that's just not right.
And you think they're the life they've made for themselves, the lifestyle they've found works for them. If certain things hadn't fallen into place, sliding door stuff, certain pieces hadn't fallen into place, they could be in prison.
When I say not right, I just think they're probably a little bit, they've got a dark sense of humour.
Yeah.
A little, well, iffy. But yeah, so I do enjoy Guinness.
Yeah, we're not sponsored. This wasn't a play to get sponsored, actually, since you're asking, but...
Yeah, we also enjoy Field and Flower, don't we?
Actually, do you know what? As we're recording, of course, you can't see it on... because you're listening at home. At some point, we might one day actually video these pods and do them properly. But I'm holding my phone up now to the screen. And while you were talking, I quickly got an email that I'm quickly reading before I put my phone on Do Not Disturb. And I hold it up to the camera. And you'll see what it is. We're expecting your Field and Flower parcel. That is literally what I'm doing now. I'll put it down.
I've got a spatchcock garlic chicken.
What'd you call me?
I'm going to try and cook tonight.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I had gammon the other night. It was... Oh.
What'd you call me?
Yeah, good, nice. Mm.
Last night...
Go on.
No, you remember, you know, Samo. Paul Sampson, Wasps, Bath... Played for Worcester for a bit, England winger/fullback. He came over last night with his son, Oscar, and my godson. I'm not a brilliant godfather. ADHD, self-diagnosed, means that I'm not very good at maintaining contact with things and being consistent. But I send money and like vouchers to Stone Island clothing, which is what he really wants. So I do that. And they came over last night and we did 8 Field and Flower burgers and 2 Bavette steaks. And we had a lovely time, thanks.
Oh, delicious. Yeah. Hope you smashed the burgers. Did you smash the burgers?
No. Do you know what? The Field and Flower ones, I don't. They're actually... Because I find most burgers a bit underwhelming, unless you're in a swanky burger joint. Like a good burger joint, not swanky, good one. But the Field and Flower ones, and we're not sponsored, I'm just saying this... They are actually so good that I just leave them. But I tell you what I do. I stick them in a pan, obviously. Always have a lid on the pan for burgers, always. And I just tip some water. When the pan's hot, I tip, chuck a bit of water in there or beer or anything, whatever you've got in hand. But I just have water. Steams up, put the lid on, and then your burgers are super moist. So you don't lose all the moisture out of the burger.
That's what I do when I put the cheese on.
Oh, cheese as well. Once I flipped them, yeah. I put the cheese on, and I always a lid with burgers. Always.
I always smash them now. Always smash them. I think the texture is better. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you lose? What do you use then?
You've got a burger smash press. Them. I got a big iron burger press. Yeah. Which time? But yeah. You can use a plate. Put a little bit of greaseproof paper under a plate. Push it down. That's all you got to do.
I've never done that. I need to do that. Yeah.
You get a really good crisp on it as well.
Mm.
Which is
because you don't cook them for very long then. Yeah, no, there's no risk of overdoing it.
Then you put your cheese on, put the lid on, bit of water in there, and then it melts and obviously toast your buns. So
yeah, it's good times, isn't it? And
yeah.
The kids when they got out of the car this morning at school, I hate people who drop their kids off at school in 4x4s. Anyway, they got out of the car and they said, Daddy, what's for dinner tonight? They said supper. They said supper. I'm going to admit that in public. They say supper.
What's for supper?
I read this thing on Twitter years ago. This woman who I followed, who's really funny. I forget who it was. She's really funny. And
Dawn French.
She said, No. She's my all time favorite.
Miranda. Miranda.
Anyway, this one, and she said, I think the worst, whatever it is, the most basically pretentious, class dividing word in the UK in the English language is supper. And she said it in a funny way. The word supper, as soon as you say supper, you're not one of us and you're basically a bell end. And I was like, hang on a minute. And I replied and said, hang on a minute. Like, I do get that. And supper is sort of a posh word. But also, my nan was a nurse from Liverpool and she said supper and supper, you know, like, and my other nan was like, not posh and from the northeast, a place called Towlaw, which was described as the armpit of the United Kingdom, a mine, basically a mining town near Newcastle, Durham County. And it's like, said supper. Yeah, better than the arsehole. So I'm like, I don't think it is always posh. Anyway, my kid's pretentious and they say supper. And I said, well, what do you want? You can have whatever you want. And they said, we want sweet potato and mac and cheese. So I said, get out of my car and make your own way home tonight. We're going to do probably a lamb shoulder because we haven't had steak. We had steak last night, so lamb shoulder tonight.
Yeah,
you've got to eat well, mate. And
any white meat?
I will, you know,
any fish? Eat the brain.
No, I do. I might have fish for lunch actually. I don't eat like this multiple nights in a row all the time, but I'm actually going. Like it's Tuesday today, isn't it? And tomorrow work sort of starts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm gone till Monday then.
See you.
I'm gone till Monday, so.
I've gone till Sunday.
You know, I look at it genuinely. I'm not being a type, but like to eat like we ate last night and we're going to eat tonight every night. It is an expensive way to eat, and I get that. But with work for the next 5 or 6 days, we're basically lunches and dinner type situation where we're being crude about it. We're basically not paying for our own food, so you might as well tuck in for a bit while you're at home.
We're at Smith and Walensky. Yeah, we're at Smith and Walensky's tomorrow.
Oh, God, we're having steak for lunch tomorrow.
Hey, get this. So I set up the marquee on Saturday, and Andrew Cotter popped his head in, as he always does, before he goes to the commentary room.
Hello.
And he had a big briefcase with him, a brown one. Well, I wouldn't say a briefcase. It's a brown leather satchel, I would say. Looked expensive.
Full of cash and cocaine, knowing Cotter.
Yeah. So what you got in there, mate? And he said, I've got a portable printer. John Barkley asked him if he could bring a printer. So he got a portable printer for John Barkley to print his notes out before commentary.
Oh, my God.
I've never, ever heard of that on a rider list before. But I knew Cotter would definitely have one. He probably had a little camping stove in there as well. Rustled up probably some mushrooms. I'd imagine him loving mushrooms on toast. He seems that sort of kind of guy.
He's foraged for in the Scottish Hills.
Yeah, he's been up there with his dogs and he's gone under the snow and he's found some mushrooms which are delicacy.
What no one knows is he had three dogs and one of them he fed the wrong mushrooms to and lost it, which is a shame. But he doesn't mention that in his books, I don't think. He always tries the mushrooms out on his dogs to see if they're safe because animals actually have a much better sixth sense than we do as for things that are poisonous and things that aren't. And he always tries them out on his dogs. And I don't want to like start a big rumor mill on social media, but he had three dogs and killed one of them using it as a medical experiment on mushrooms. And it's a real shame because it sort of undermines his reputation a little bit as Mr. Nice Guy, because you and I know better than that.
What would you do if I said to you, oh, Flats, do me a favor, will you? Can you bring a printer to comms for me?
I'll put the phone down.
Yeah.
I'm sitting now in my office, sort of snug thing, and I've got a printer and I have kids that do homework and stuff. And I'm 44 and I have never managed to have a printer at my house that works properly or consistently. I've bought new printers. I've now stopped. I'm not doing it anymore.
I can't
print anything out.
They work, but you've got to use them constantly. Otherwise, the ink dries up. And you just got to buy new ink all the time. So
yeah, that's it.
I'll have to print something for the kids like once a month. And it would cost me like 60 quid for an ink cartridges because they're all dried up by then because I don't use it very often. Because no, paper sort of gone now, isn't it? Everything's online. So you don't really need to print too much out. You can sign documents online. You don't have to scan documents too much. But it just breaks me. But anyway, lack of preparation by John Barkley, but Commentary was superb, so can't fault them too
It was
much.
Really good. His commentary was really, really good. And I think I texted you that or someone else during the game. I was going to text him, and I thought, no, it's too creepy crawly, but I thought he was great. And I must say, watching Wales Scotland, we might talk about rugby at some point. We should do, really, but it's a Six Nations. But I must say, if I didn't like it, I just wouldn't mention it. But I really enjoyed listening to Jiffy and Barks and Cotter. I really enjoyed that, and I kind of like the Jiffy bits. I like, you know, when everyone says numbers, that stuff he shouts. Somebody makes a mistake, goes, oh no, oh no. And I remember being told early on in my co-coms career, if you're not actually speaking, move the mic away, because people don't want to hear, oh. And actually, I really like it. I like that. I like those bits from Jiff, because I imagine him sitting there annoyed or frustrated or whatever. And that's kind of what I want from him. I don't want it from every commentator, but like, I don't want Ben Kay to get angry or whatever, because he's not. He will criticize people without being venomous. And I like that about Ben. But I like Jiffy. I like how natural he is on the mic. I thought it was great.
He said during the game in the second half, he said it's like the Hong Kong Sevens. It was amazing. It was a great analogy. There's something out at the moment on, it'd probably be on iPlayer. It's called Slammed. It's about they've done different eras. I did the first one, which was about sort of The second one's about the '70s. This one's about the '80s. It's amazing. It's my favorite one so far. Seventies was good, because obviously that was the greatest team we've ever seen. But the '80s is obviously, I can relate to it a lot more, because you remember a lot more. You know, the '70s you have to watch back, but you sort of live in it in the '80s, and it's brilliant, because it's all gearing up towards all the Welsh players leaving for rugby league. It's amazing,
right?
So it's great fun. Like the World Cup, the first rugby World Cup they have, and what, Wales finished third. I think that's they beat Australia, which was the Those best, days. Yeah, the best result they've had.
Well, they might have won it, so except for Warby. I don't want to keep going on about what Warby did, but he knows what he did, didn't he? He knows.
Yeah, he did on purpose, mate. He's just trying to think of life after.
That's why he works out so hard. He's just trying to exercise his demons, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly that. But it's good. It's brilliant. I loved it. And Jiff obviously stars in that a fair bit.
I watched that.
Griselda. Have you done Griselda yet?
No. I haven't got time, mate. I'm too busy. Okay. No, I've also forgot. No, we're trying to watch Criminal Record at the moment on, what's it on? Prime, I think.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, it is, actually. Yeah, it is. It's got... Oh, I can never remember anyone's name. I'm rubbish at this. The bloke who was the really aggressive Tory whip in Thick of It. Anyway, I've forgotten his name. But it's
Michael,
really,
Michael,
really good.
Michael Cambolaria? Blolia?
Oh, forgotten. It's really, really good. Yeah, it's good. It's good. We're enjoying that. That's good. And also watching Jodie Foster in True Detective, and not quite sure about that, but persevering for a bit. And if it gets a bit supernaturally, we might find that fading out.
Don't watch.
I'm not one of these
episode,
people
then.
That has to finish a series because I've started it.
Don't watch the last episode then.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say to you.
All right. But we as a family, we are very much enjoying Gladiators at the moment.
Oh, who's your favorite?
Not saying. Viper. No, Diamond.
Sabre.
But all the girls in the house like Legend.
Yeah, I like Legend.
They love Legend.
And I also like Giant.
Yeah. Yeah.
The hammer people in the gauntlet. It's brilliant.
Well, do you know what? The first episode or two, I was like, stick me in there. You'll be better than these guys. They're wimp. They're like weak. You've got whack people. And now they've obviously been told, step it up a bit in the gauntlet, and they are burying people.
The last one. Oh, he's got like a long, he's got a long tube, whoever it is. It's often Giant. He just hammers them.
Mate, he battered them. We would actually be really good at that.
Yeah.
We would get through that all right.
And Powerball. And Powerball.
And is it Harry or Henry, Harry Aikens Ariti, the... what's he called? But the rig on him is just an outrage, isn't it? I mean,
yeah. Is he Nitro?
Nitro, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolute rig city, mate. Couldn't get a fat if he wanted to, that bloke.
Nope.
Couldn't get fat if you wanted to.
Nice little dance as well, isn't he? He comes out right like that.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. He's got big traps, which separate. They separate the men from the boys, the traps. Because anyone can build a chest event, but if you haven't got traps, you... I love a look at his calves and see how he's doing on that front. But because he was a sprinter, you don't want
big calves. Don't have big calves. And the reason, racehorses.
Yeah, the reason you don't want big calves as a sprinter, despite what you might imagine, is that. And I found this out because I never ran very fast, but I used to struggle quite a lot with my once a season or so with my hamstrings. And that is because when your legs extend, it's your hamstrings that pull your feet and therefore your calves back in. So if you've got really big, heavy calves, it's like putting weights on your ankles and running. Your hamstrings have got to pull those calves back in. And I used to be like, I couldn't wear the club socks. I had to wear special socks, that sort of stuff. And everyone's like, oh, monster calves. I was like, mate, I'd very happily chop these in half if I could just... I can't warm them up. They cramp. They kill my hamstrings and I can't wear normal socks. Yeah, I'd love to get rid of them.
A pair of Ralph Lauren shorts on the beach, they look mint.
Oh, mate, I'm back. Oh, yeah. I'm happy for them now.
Yeah.
I'm all right with them now.
Yeah. Because people will spend their whole life in a gym trying to get calves like that.
Yeah, you can't.
And they won't even get near it.
No. No. I see guys in my gym doing heavy calf workouts, all different angles, hitting calves. And good on them.
Yeah, go for it.
They are hard to build, I think.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We're going to have to get into it. Six Nations now. Loved your commentary. I think I did text you.
Cheers. You did actually, which you don't. I don't always listen to it. Because if then it doesn't mean anything.
Got home from an event. I hosted an event for Cardiff Rugby Community Foundation with Steve Spears and Joe Ledley. Spearsy was amazing. Ledley was class. And I just, as soon as the event ended, I didn't drink. Straight in the car. Said goodbye to everyone. They carried me out like their Pope Society. Got in the car, drove home, game on. In my bed. Loved it. Loved it. Great opening game.
Yeah,
really good.
Scratching your balls, lovely. It was, apart from anything else, we'll talk about the game, but getting to, obviously with the other co-coms and stuff like Darce is great, and we're all kind of, you know, it's, he was a much better player than I was, but we're all kind of peers, you know, we're all similar ages and stuff. But I still, like, I've done 100 games with Miles Harrison now, probably, and or 50 games, and done some really big ones with Miles, and getting to work with the people you grew up listening to, like getting to commentate with Miles and, you know, Cotter very occasionally, and Al Eakin and Nick Mullins, just like, oh man, they're just, you.
Yeah.
A week to week, you almost
turn up. You turn up, and you turn up like this.
Miles, yes. On Friday night, he doesn't.
Good hands today.
Yeah, and you know, he won't listen to this because he would only listen to useful pods, I'm sure. But it's just like, wow. And he sums things up, and he summed it up perfectly, which is why I mentioned him, because he said it might not be a classic, it might not have been the classic game we all wanted, but it's a classic performance from Ireland. And I thought that's about right, actually. And But Ireland were just
before the Willemser,
absolutely mega.
Yeah,
mega.
They were even before the Willemser.
France are really disappointing. Double yellow, they were really poor.
Card. France were under a lot of pressure before that. I think Italy. I think Ireland would have won regardless whether they had France had 15 or 14 men on the field because they looked that good. I actually thought at the start of the campaign, I thought the winner of this game will win the Six Nations. And whoever wins it will, I think, go on to win a Grand Slam. But I did pick France as my favourites because it was a close call. And I just thought maybe that home advantage would be the difference. Both obviously hurting after the World Cup exit. And I just thought being in France, that might be that extra 5% France would need. And I nearly put on the end of that, because I did some stuff for TNT, I nearly put sort of in brackets on the end of that, if their discipline holds it out. And Willemser was, I mean, he was probably lucky that the first one wasn't a red card. The second one was a red card. But surely, mate, you've got to be squeaky clean after that first one. Like, he's the second man in the tackle. He's upright. Connection with shoulder to head. There's just no option at all. That's what you run the risk of if you're going high like that into contact these days. Yeah. Yep.
And he was already tackled.
So really poor discipline.
He was already tackled.
What I would say, Flatty, is
Ireland
just, there's no doubt they've got amazing players, really intelligent players. And whether that intelligence just comes from being coached at a young age by good coaches, or whether that, which I think a lot of it comes from the actual Irish coaching team and sort of sitting these players down and just educating them on how they want the team to play, because they realign so quickly. They play with so much movement, like they always have done. And it is, they've set the tone really of how I want to see rugby being played, because they play with width, they play tight, they play with loads of movement. So you don't know who you're going to get. You look at that, you know, look at the tries they created. They were amazing. That Bundiaki offload to Jameson Gibson Park. It's quality. It's quality play. The Tadhg Byrne try. They've set France up for that, because all the balls are going out the back, especially off Crowley. All of a sudden then, you've got two players running behind the back of Tadhg Byrne. I think it might be Dante doesn't know who to take. And Crowley knows he's going to put it short because his eyes have gone the wrong way. And it's a brilliant ball. And I thought Jack Crowley was excellent, considering there were huge shoes to fill for Johnny Sexton.
Did you notice in comms that I noticed the eyes on Crowley?
I can't remember everything you said.
Well, you weren't listening properly. I said, watch the eye. I said, watch Crowley's eyes here. Yeah. He looks past, and that's what throws. I think it was Dante. Yeah, throws Dante. You know, brilliant. And then it was like, great shout. And then, you got producers saying, great spot, Flats, and that sort of stuff. Anyway, so you had Miles, Gordon Darcy, and me. And the seats for the pundits were a bit low, so you couldn't see the game brilliantly. So Dricko actually came up to watch the game and just sat on an extra seat next to me. And as like Mars and Darce were doing their bit, Gordon were talking about that try. I looked at Dricko and just said, "Whoa, that was good, you know." And he was like, "Yeah, the eyes, Crowley's eyes." And I turned back around and I said, "Look at Mars. If you look at the eyes on Jack Crowley," and everyone's like, "Oh, well done,
Fraser."
Dricko is like, "You twat." and then he was sitting there for the second half making notes, and the lads are talking, and I just looking over at Dricko's notes, seeing if there's anything I can nick. And he said Crowley, something along the lines of Crowley, excellent second half. Two touchline conversions, hugely important. And then I was like, right before the end, near the end, I was just like, and I said, I think Jack Crowley in second half, there's two touchline conversions. I think they're actually really important kicks. They really set a turn and they're big for him. And those were actually big moments, whatever I said. And I looked around to see Dricko laughing, but it'd gone. Anyway, so he didn't know I'd said it, and he went in the post-match and said
first,
exactly
sir.
The same thing
said
that I'd said. So,
you said it
so
first.
I deliberately made it.
Big,
I deliberately
big
made
McCarthy,
it sound like he was copying me.
Player
so,
of the match.
Yeah. Well done, Bri.
Jeepers.
Love watching him. He's some boy. I was talking again to Adrika about him, and here's like, this guy's hardly played. He's really young. And yet he's in the Ireland squad repeatedly. And we're like, well, why is he there? Like, he must have something about him. You speak to the lads in camp and they're like, yeah, he's really got something about him. He's a bit different. And then James Ryan arguably isn't on the form, in the form of his life. He's dropped off a little bit, but he's still a high performer. And you could say that Ireland in the World Cup, when they took him off, fell apart. So he's still a very important player. But actually, you just can't argue with him being benched for Big Joe Mack, because I thought he was fantastic, like banging and clanging the whole game, super competent. No, and he hasn't played much. He's a young bloke. And as Dricko said afterwards, if you're going to have a lid like that for your first start, you know, you better play well. I thought he was...
Yeah, I thought they might have missed great. Mack really, Hansen really a bit good. More.
But really enjoyed watching him.
Nash scores a nice try in the corner. But yeah, I know.
They didn't really use him much, did they?
He's everywhere.
Was playing,
he's everywhere.
He but
I just thought he is quite a big
Nash,
player for them, even though he's on the wing.
Yeah.
There's still full of instances where he's on the ball, especially in attack. But they didn't.
Mm. Well, Damien Penaud's on the wing, and he wasn't great Friday night.
But what about
a different team without him when he's on
DuPont.
Form. So, you know.
Missing him.
But yeah, miss it, yeah, with that. But Luku, to be fair, Luku did not have a good game on Friday night. Maxime Luku at 9, but I watch a reasonable amount of the top 14 when I can, and my sort of go to teams would be Toulouse and Bordeaux. He plays at Bordeaux with Jalibert, and his form has been just brilliant. He has been so good the last few months, and he was such a good backup at the World Cup. They just didn't have a good night, and people are saying Legarić should start. Maybe they're right. He's less structured, but he's brutal to play against because he's so quick and he's brilliant. But, you know, Jalibert wasn't great and he's great. Donti was verging on invisible and he's great. I thought Fiku actually was poor. I thought most of his involvements were substandard. So I thought actually, and you're talking about a great player here, you couldn't really pick anyone who was, well, actually, Mavaka I thought was excellent, the hooker. Cyril Bay I thought was excellent, but other than that, you're struggling really with the French teams. They just had a bad night. But when you Damien Penaud again, even though he's on the wing and he's a long way from a lot of the action, he's a decent gauge for France, because if he's popping up, scoring tries, causing trouble, they're probably on good form. But they were just outgunned, really. They were outthought, and I actually think now I've seen, you know, the last Six Nations when the two teams played in Dublin, I actually think this French team almost couldn't beat this Irish team. I don't see how they beat them. Like, if things stay roughly the same for the next couple of years, whatever the venue, I actually don't think they can beat Ireland if Ireland continue to progress, because Ireland ask you loads of questions and test you for the full hour and a half, you know, with injury time and stuff, and France don't. They just don't do that. They come in phase in, you know, always be downtime. Whereas with Ireland, there kind of isn't.
The combination is obviously, I think, probably number one. But Ringrose didn't play. I thought Henshaw was just beautiful, excellent. He's so good. They've got so much strength and depth across that team. It's incredible. Like, you know, it is. But the Nash try, his footwork, just a step inside Jalibert, the offload then to Doris, the hands out to Nash. You know, it's quality play. Like, whoever, if they have one or two injuries, some teams can't cope with that. Ireland can.
And by the way, my mate, Dave Beresford, who knows more about French rugby than most people in French rugby, texted me the other night and said, if you get a chance, watch DuPont play for Toulouse. I think it was against Bordeaux, I can't remember. Watch it. Yeah, at 10, because he's on a completely different level. And are we watching the greatest player of all time in the making? Let's see how long he can stay.
Just get a charge down.
Are we watching the greatest player of all time?
Have you not seen it? Oh, mate.
I'm going to find that this afternoon and watch it.
Two tries that he's heavily involved with. I think he is the greatest player of all time. Move on, Flats. Give us Italy, England.
Um, Yeah, I think England showed in patches more ambition with the ball. I think they very likely had a plan for the World Cup, a short-term plan, which was conservative, and it worked to a point, very nearly got them to a final. So that plan is, they're loosening things a bit, or they're adjusting that plan. Some of the attack looked better. I still think that, I love Fraser Dingwall, been a big fan for a long time. Everyone who watches him is a big fan because he's brilliant. But whether it's Dingwall or Slade you swap out, I think Ollie Lawrence is maybe the biggest loss England could have suffered at this point, because he might be the form player. So, and he's just a game breaker in the midfield, because he's kind of, at this stage, in this form, he's got everything. So, but then the real spark for me was Tommy Freeman. When he gets involved, things happen. And I feel like, you know, when it's a bit like, I remember being at Bath with Kyle Eastmond, and it was like, look, there are times when we just, if we're at the end of a tight game and things are really tight and we need to find something, we just have to get the ball to Kyle as much as possible. And Kyle sort of blushed a bit, but that was kind of our plan, and it did used to work when he was fit. And I feel like England might have end up with a bit of a LeBron theory, a LeBron game plan with Tommy Freeman. Let's just involve him as much as possible. Because he's big, quick and clever, and he's does good things, and he's not beyond mistakes or above mistakes or anything like that. The mistakes aren't beyond him, rather, but actually I think he is really the spark there. Real pace, real size. So that would be the most exciting thing. And I thought the England locks played really well. So Marrow, I thought, was on really, really good form. Chesham, I really, really like. I thought Ethan Roots, would he have been my man of the match? I would have been in the top couple. Thought he was excellent, but he wouldn't have been my man of the match. But actually, he's on debut. I thought he carried hard, which is what he's there to do. I thought he was really good. So yeah, overall, fine. I think that the story of the game isn't England. The story of the game's Italy, and the fact that they certainly could have won that game. I thought their attack looked really, really good, and it wasn't just off-the-cuff flair. It wasn't just going a bit mad, and it wasn't passion that nearly won in the game. It was actually being good, because in the World Cup, England just kicked the plastic off the ball for 6 weeks most of the time. And in the World Cup, Italy ran everything. And as I've said before in this pod, and without boring people senseless, if you have one way to play and that is all you do, you become really predictable. So if you kick everything, everyone knows, and they hang back. If you run everything, everyone knows, and they don't hang, you know. So the balance seems to be better for Italy, because in the World Cup, they lost all sense of balance, ran from everywhere. Well,
they had New Zealand and France.
500 nils New Zealand or whatever it was.
They were trying to target one of those games to get out of their pool. So
of course it is.
I suppose they had to try something a little bit different. But this for a couple of years now. Italy's attack is good. It's better attack than Wales. They get themselves into really good positions. They realign really quickly. And it's not just off second and third phase off set piece. It's kick receipt. You take the ball so many times now. That's becoming a new set piece, really, kick receipts. Because you set up, you run back, and teams like Ireland are brilliant at it.
Yeah.
Because they get themselves into position. So predominantly your 15 is going to take it. You're going to set it up, and then you get into position and you attack. And it's a really good time to attack off set piece. Off kick receipt a lot of time, because sometimes teams are kicking under pressure, which means the chase isn't great. You've often got forwards out on that back line as well, which you can attack. But Italy did look good. I think England looked a little bit vulnerable around those wider edges, which is something that Wales will have to look at. But you can't attack like that unless you get any go-forward ball, which could be a bit of a nightmare for Wales against England next week. Because if you get on the front foot, then you can attack like that. But it's very difficult to do that off slow ball, as Wales found out. But I do have to say I was very impressed with Italy. They sometimes overplay a little bit too much, maybe, and they also are quite susceptible at leaking a few tries. But there is, again, signs of improvement, which we want to see. So I hope it goes well from this season. They've got Ireland up next, which is going to be tough. Great for Ireland to keep that momentum going from a great win.
Yeah, I'm commentating on that. And there's a very good chance they won't win that game, but I would love to see them, well, either win it or do brilliantly. And keep their game together a bit. Yeah. Because they would. I thought they were really good to watch. Italy, and it wasn't Latin passion and all that. Yeah. It's not that. That'll get you through 5 minutes. You've actually got to be good. I thought they were really good.
Yeah, he's good.
How good's Brex, by the way? Nacho Brex. How good is he?
Brex is good. Do you know where Brex has come on loads? I think maybe 4 years ago, he was just direct. He would just take it up direct. But as the game moves on now, he's worked really hard on that distribution game. So he's worked hard on putting that ball to the line, either tipping it onto someone short, putting it back behind, which is a real difficult skill. Not everyone can do it. And to be able to do it correctly without, I don't know, without drifting wide, keeping your hips straight, giving it late, making sure that you're doing your job of drawing in defenders. Because so many players give it early. When you give it early, it's really easy just to drift off and the whole move then gets stuck. But if you take it flat, you do your job, committing those two or three defenders, they can't recover then because defenders are squared up.
Yeah.
When the ball goes behind, they can't get back out. And that's where often the space is either on the inside or if someone jams in from the outside because they're panicking, it's on the outside. So, yeah, he's good. But Menoncello is the one for me, mate. Tommaso Menoncello. He's the one to look out for. But I like the combinations. Okay, I liked Tommy Allen at 15. I thought it worked well with him and Garbisi.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, they did look
good. I still want Ange Capuoso to come back this week,
Garbisi at 12 a little bit. Just to add another ball player there. It worked okay, but I do like Tommy Allen at 15 because he's another creator. And it suits the way Italy play. And it's helping that Benetton are doing pretty well. Zebre have had a better season. You know, they didn't win a game last season. And they've won a few this year. So it does seem that Italian rugby is back on the right track, going the right way.
Hope so. Really, really hope so.
Ooh, yeah,
let's talk about the game, please. Let's talk about Wales-Scotland. I text you. Let's be honest. I text you something on the lines of at half time. You're obviously working. You've got your stuff going on, so you couldn't reply. But I text you at half time. Something on the lines of like, oh my god, Wales. Oh my god. And then at half towards the end of the game, I was like, oh my god, they're amazing. First of all, Finn Russell was taking the piss in the first half. He was doing exactly what he wanted. That was one of the easiest halves of international rugby he will ever play.
I thought we were going to go out and play a little bit different. And I thought we were going to go out and try something because the pressure is off because it's been reset, Welsh rugby. Loads of new players have come in. So I thought it might be a case of not being too pragmatic, go out there and actually trying to play a little bit different because you can't out-muscle teams anymore, you know, because of personnel. You know, personnel dictates how you want to play. Like, if Scotland had, I don't know, Andre Pollard at 10, they wouldn't play the same way as they do with Finn Russell. So personnel dictates how you play. So Wales would play a certain way with Dan Bigger, but that wouldn't work with maybe Sam Costello or Johan Lloyd at 10. But
Johan Lloyd,
I think, tactically in the first half, Wales got it wrong because we were setting up rucks in the midfield only for Sam Costello to drop back into the pocket just to kick it. And that's pre-called already. I thought that Scotland were winning the game line battle defensively, so they come off the line far quicker than Wales were running the ball at them. And Wales couldn't generate really any quick ball off first phase. That has a knock-on effect then second and third phase because you're against numbers, it's slow ball. And any times that we did get quick ball off first phase, second or third phase then would either turn the ball over or be forced to kick because Scotland's defence was so good and they were winning all the collisions. There were four lineouts in Scotland's 22 in the first half, which either were ruined at source or one or two phases later, looked a shambles really of a Welsh attack. And I thought going in, and I thought Scotland were good. I showed a clip on Scrum 5 Flats of there was a turnover ball on the line out and Finn Russell kicks it wide to Carl Rowe. Carl Rowe catches it and he's half a metre from touch. And he's not a big bloke, Carl Rowe. He's not Duane van der Merwe. And you've got Rio Dyer and Cam Winnett there. bloke should have been bundled into touch. There was no physical edge in that game in the first half. Nothing. Six phases later, Duane van der Merwe's scored. You know, so there was no... They lacked emotion, I think, in the first half. And Scotland were good. Scotland looked good. Finn Russell, you're right, had an armchair ride.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought half-time, 20 points in, stranger things have happened. This will test Scotland's mental strength now. And then, lo and behold, 2 minutes after half-time, really poor kick chase from Wales. Because you watch it, if you watch it back, have a look at Johan Lloyd, have a look at Nick Tompkins. They're not as a line. They're individual chasing. Nick Tompkins...
Oh, the kick chase. They Nick showed Tompkins it on, yeah, I saw it on television.
Johan Lloyd ends up coming.
It wasn't a kick chase.
What's going on there? And then it's a good offload by Finn Russell and a hell of a finish by van der Merwe. But what is that? That's not what you taught. It was bizarre. And the only... Wales were then forced to play. You're 27 points down. You know you're not going to go for goal. You're not going to kick the ball that much. You're not going to play percentage rugby because you're so many points behind. And I just hate the fact that it takes 27 points on a scoreboard for Wales to go out there and actually try something. And when they did, mate, they looked good.
They look great. They look much better with Thomas Williams and Johan Lloyd on half backs. So much more threatening. Wayne Wright really set the tone from a couple of kickoffs where he got it, and instead of being conservative, he just went for it. And that was the first time we really saw what an athlete he is in that game, because he is an athlete specimen. And he went for it, and I thought he really set the tone as well in that second half. But what I would ask you, what I would wonder is, Wales have got this conservative game plan. Gatland has won a lot of big games and been a great coach. But the game plan, the approach tends to be conservative, British Lions and all that. So I would look at this Welsh team and think, I know they're chasing the game, pressure's off to a certain extent, although 27-0 down at home, you could argue the pressure's tripled. But they are chasing a game. But I think the Welsh team looks significantly more suited to playing an expansive, aggressive game than the conservative game. So when they play England this weekend, will they go back to conservative game plan, which didn't look like it suited them? They weren't very good at it, frankly. Or do they actually say, we're going to try and sting England in attack and we're going to play far more like we did in the second half? Because I'd love to think they'll do that, but I feel like history tells us they won't.
Right, that's just a fact. But you can play slightly differently to what Wales are playing for. I hope you're right, Flats. I hope there is a clear message given this week from Gatland, because that's the only place it's the only place it's going to come from. You know, because
attacking focus, yeah.
Really, what Wales and how Wales will play, because that's all you do in training. You go through scenarios of what you do. I really do, because we have to play differently. First half, some of our decoys were so poor. I highlighted a couple of them on the show. Like, just you've got people ambling, you know, to take a run off nine, and they're plainly not going to get the ball. You know, and it's just so easy to move across and drift off. When you look at some of the better teams, mm-hmm. Ireland, they're not really decoys because everyone's an option. You know, and they run with conviction. We didn't run with conviction in the first half. So it was an absolute nightmare. I think Elliot D made an improvement when he came on as well. Hope he starts next week as well. Even though we lost one of the lineouts.
Agreed, he was very good. Yeah,
four or 5 minutes before the end. But a couple of things during that game were second half miles better. We ran the ball. We actually had a crack and we tried to get the ball wide into the winger's hands. I thought Josh Adams was quite quiet. One of his very quiet games, got turned over a couple of times. Mason Grady, I think, needs to start. Johan Lloyd needs to start. I think Sam Costello is out. I don't think he's going to recover from an HIA. So Johan Lloyd starts. If he was fit, I think they may have stayed with Sam Costello. And I picked Johan Lloyd on the bench because I think you need a player like him on there. Not just wingers can be finishers, and most wingers are finishers, but you need some level of creativity in there. You need someone to create that space for a winger. And he is very good at that. You know, he's got good pace, but he's also can deliver and put players into space, put players through holes. So I picked him on the wing, thinking that Sam Costello might be fit. Yeah, but he's not, and I think he's going to start Johan Lloyd at 10. Yes. So
keep my mind for that.
I think Will Rowlands might be back as well, which is good. But this was a strange one, Flex. Scotland were down to a player. They gave 14 penalties away on the bounce. Halftime was in between, so you can't.
Yeah, amazing that.
With a bit of context.
Amazing that.
It was 70 minutes on the clock, and Sione Tuipulotu was off. And Scotland were under pressure. And we end up kicking the ball away. He kicked the ball away. We didn't get the ball back for 4 minutes. That's 4 minutes. And then Tuipulotu comes back on then. So that's 4 minutes there where a team is under pressure. And you've got to go for him. You've got to go from then. We end up getting another line out then, which we lose. But 40 men on the field, kick the ball away. You don't get it back for 4 minutes. You've got to know how to put teams away. And I think we just lacked a little bit of composure towards the end, because as weird as the game was, we had more chances than Scotland. We had more entries, I think, in the 22. We had more scoring opportunities, but we couldn't do enough with it. And I know that's not rugby. You know, rugby is about how many points you come away with when you go into 22s. But there were chances there for Wales. And Scotland were under pressure for about 15 minutes in the start of that. But in the first half, from about 10 minutes onwards, and Wales couldn't do anything with it. So a little bit disappointing, but not too bothered, mate, because we're in a cycle. And, you know, if it was 3 or 4 years ago, you could probably really get into the boys and say, you know, that's not good enough. But got loads of new players. Cam Winnett looked pretty good at 15. Hope he keeps his spot. There's a pretty inexperienced front row, which went well. Domachowski, Azzurati, when he came on, and Elliot D as well.
I thought they were really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd start with both of those.
It's not all doom and gloom, mate, but I just hope we start games better and actually, from the start, want to go out there and attack rather than just playing percentage rugby. It was deep, wasn't it? It was deep.
Yeah, that's what I hope as well. That's what I hope as well.
Do you know what? I have got some questions, which we have to answer, because I put it out there.
What?
Yeah, we will be quick. We will be quick, okay.
Be quick then, because I've got a coffee meeting.
Dan Stoneman. This is all from X. In Six Nations of Meat, what six choices are you going for? And rank them, please.
Six Nations of Meat.
Is it? Well, everyone has steak.
One for each country.
What's your favourite meat? Yeah.
Ribeye steak is probably my favourite meat. Roast chicken I struggle to beat if it's done well.
I want to go, I like a thick ribeye. I want a thick ribeye. I'm going to go, second I'm going to go a roast chicken. We'll say France for that.
Nice garlicky lamb shoulder. Yeah, I'll have a bit of that. Italian sort of cured meats. Yeah, I'm up for that. I'll find meat anywhere. Irish, what we have in Ireland.
Sausages.
Beef again. Do you know what I used to get from Ireland? Ryan Caldwell, my old mate, second row from Bath. Played for Bath. He's from Belfast. He used to have his butcher mate send us over steak beef sausages from Ireland. And they were lush. Okay, they were lush. I really like those.
Please don't give a long answer on this.
Scotland haggis. Yeah, go on.
Just don't give us a long answer on this one, because
all right.
This is from...
I'm in a rush anyway, so go on.
MC Tom ID. Don't know what his name is. Weird one.
You're the one making it take ages now.
I know. All right, right. What's Flats' thoughts on insurance hike on Land Rovers now they can be stolen?
Actually, Land Rover brought out their own insurance now, but the new... Read Jeremy Clarkson's article from a couple of weeks ago. Okay, the new Range Rovers are incredibly difficult to steal. And I think he says in his column, only three have been stolen since they were released. And I did read that the problem is effectively solved. Now, I could be wrong on that. But I had a mate who will remain nameless because I haven't asked his permission, but an ex-player who rang me and said, I can't get insurance for my Range Rover. And can you help me? Because I bought a Range Rover and I can't get it insured.
This isn't quick. This isn't quick.
And anyway, I called him a couple of weeks later and said, I've got someone for you. And he goes, no, it's all sorted now. It's fine now. So it's back to normal. So I'd found someone with a dealership who would do a thing. And he was like, no, it's all good. So I think that is kind of, I don't know, could be kind of past.
Quick fire. Okay, Dave. Got it?
Yep.
Yeah. What would you do if you weren't playing rugby? If you didn't play rugby, what would you do?
Be a farmer.
Be an accountant, I reckon you'd be.
I wouldn't. You'd be the opposite of that. Go on then.
Be in the army.
Farmer.
Why are Wales playing South Africa and England? I saw that. Maybe to do with trying to fill a stadium full of South Africans, possibly.
Where are they playing?
Apparently Wales are playing South Africa and Twickenham in the autumn.
Are they really?
Mm. Just maybe trying to promote rugby down there. The only thing I can think of, Flats, would be why the Ospreys played the Sharks down in Twickenham before, was just trying to tap into that South African market. There's more South Africans in London than there would be in Wales. I'm trying to get more people to the games, I would say.
I love how France go around the country. Marseille Friday night, Lille next weekend, whenever it is. I like that. I like the idea of the England team going to different stadia myself.
Yep. And that was from Laura. We'll do one more. This is from Philip Morris. Do you think ending the Wales 25 cap rule and the England Prem only rule would affect the leagues and player developments? Yeah, it would affect the league, I think, if Wales ended the 25 cap rule, because I think the majority of people would go and it would take too long to recover. I do like the 25 cap rule as it stands, but I think if we lost too many players, too many youngsters, then that might be a bit of an issue. But if we don't have a 25 cap rule, then the league will become unbelievably tough for us and we'll be right down the bottom all the way through. So it serves its purpose for me.
Lance? Yeah, I'm a lot of people now are saying that England should relax the rule about letting people go abroad and still play for England. I don't agree. I think they should keep the rule. I know there's a restriction of trade issue there and the lads can't earn as much, but what thing is, English clubs cannot compete with French clubs at this stage. They cannot. English clubs have gone bust. It could happen again. So we have to, instead of trying to compete with French clubs, it's like, well, if you're not going to let them go, you've got to pay them more. You cannot pay them more. You cannot start playing players more than they're paid now. I want the lads to earn millions, but the club's major outlay is player wages. And all these clubs are in debt, or so many of, not all, so many of these clubs are in millions of pounds worth of debt every year, losing millions. If you don't prioritise the health of the Premiership, there will be no clubs to supply the England team.
Yeah.
So you'll be taking an England team from French and Japanese clubs and the odd Welsh and Irish, whatever it is. You will be picking an England team almost entirely from abroad. So we need to prioritise the Prem. And actually, the word product is grim, but the actual quality of the Prem has been amazing the last season and a half. It's been brilliant. So I agree with the rule. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think that's enough for us.
All right.
Yeah.
Well done, guys. Keep going. That was deep, yeah?
Right. Who's going to win the weekend, quickly?
England will beat Wales. Ireland will beat Italy. And Scotland will beat France.
Ooh, I agree with you? All of those. I agree with all those, apart from, I think, France will beat Scotland.
Okay, let's find out.
Okay. They peaked.
Good luck, everyone.
Already. All right. Bye, everybody.
Good luck, everyone. Bye.
See you tomorrow.
Cheers, boy.
12:30. Are you having a few beers or not? Are you going ahead and off? Long day at the races, haven't you? That's all.
I've got nowhere to stay yet, either. No. I'll book something. All right. Cheers, boy.
Those.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. and it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.